You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Next on the show, we're going to be talking about Kiribati. And the thing that almost everyone seems to know about Kiribati is that, well, they're a low-lying atoll nation at risk of climate change, and they've gone out and purchased some land in Fiji. Now, the reasons for that purchase aren't totally clear. It's widely been reported that the plan is for the population of Kiribati to move there. If and when Kiribati itself becomes uninhabitable. Anote Tong, the outgoing president there, has offered other explanations, for instance, that it might be used to grow food for Kiribati. But in fact, 18 months after the purchase was finalised, locals say that no one from Kiribati has even been there. So what's going on? James Ellsmore is a postgraduate student at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, researching Pacific development in relation to climate change. And he recently spent some time staying on the land. I spoke to him and began by asking him how he came to be staying there.
I've had a long interest in the politics of climate change and development in the Pacific, and Kiribati is a country that often comes up in that conversation due to its low-lying nature and high risk from sea level rise. And the president of Kiribati has often talked about this land and how he could potentially move the entire population of Kiribati there in the event of the country being flooded by sea level rise. But I read a couple of articles by various journalists that had questioned this claim, but on the whole, it seemed that the mainstream media had fully bought into this and no one had really questioned it. And very few outsiders had been to actually look at the land. And so I had a grant from my university to do some further research and go to Fiji this last summer, or North American summer, and spent several days living on the island, living with the villagers, and just to really find out more about the area and the consequences for the people living in that area if Kiribati were to move there.
And we'll talk a little bit about the people in due course, but let's get to some basics. Where exactly is this land?
Okay, so it's on Vanuatu, which is the second biggest island in Fiji. It's about a 3 or 4 hour drive from Savu, which is the nearest town, and some of your listeners might know is a fairly big yachting destination, but it is quite remote. So about 3-4 hour drive down a dirt track on the south coast of Vanuatu. The land is about 5,500 acres. It's known as the Natuavatu Estate and was formerly owned by the Anglican Church in Fiji. So about there's a small village called Naviavia in the middle of the land, home to about 500 Solomon Islanders.
And what's the terrain like, James?
It varies quite a lot. It goes right from the coast, which is mangrove swamp, up into some hills and, I guess you'd call it, rainforest very quickly. So it rises quite steeply from the ocean. The oceanside part of the land is very wet. You couldn't really live there, but it has quite a lot of coconut plantations and is used by the locals to they harvest copra there and fish there. And then there's a small flat area where the village is. And then behind that, in the hills, most of the land is forested there. There are some cleared areas used for cattle ranching, again, by the villagers.
Now, if we think about the purchase that was made by Kiribati, there seem to have been some mixed messages about what this is actually all about, what the purpose of it is. So what do you make of it?
And I think the purchase was always made with good intention from Kiribati. So when it was first purchased, the president, Anote Tong, announced that it was in preparation for the migration of his people and said that he was actually quoted as saying if needed, they could house the entire 100,000-person population of Kiribati on this island.
Is that realistic?
I don't think so. The land is already home to 500 people. The villagers said that it could maybe hold 100, 200 more, but the idea of holding 100,000 people in this very remote area with land and an economy that they wouldn't be prepared for because the terrain itself and the crops that grow there are very different to what grow in Kiribati is quite ridiculous. So since he had said that, he has actually changed his mind and has publicly talked about the land as being an investment for the Kiribati government, mm-hmm. and has also said it could have been used to grow crops to export to Kiribati.
You've been there recently, and right now, is there any sign that this land is being used for that? I mean, there's no one from Kiribati living there. Is there any food being grown there for Kiribati?
So, as far as I can tell, the land was purchased a year and a half ago now by Kiribati, and there has been no progress, there's been no use of the land, and as far as the villagers knew, no one from Kiribati had visited the land since the purchase. It's been continued to be used by the people living there, but in terms of Kiribati, there doesn't seem to have been any action there.
Could it realistically be used to grow food for Kiribati? What do the people living there now do?
Yeah, so it seems quite a strange idea that this land could be used to grow food for Kiribati. It's very remote and would involve quite a long sea journey to Kiribati, and I question why the government wouldn't use that money instead to purchase food on the open market. Instead, there doesn't really seem much of a plan of how that food will be grown, who is growing the food, and any mechanism for that. And the people who already live there are relying on that land to grow themselves food. And so if that wasn't available for them and was exported to Kiribati instead, you would be displacing some of the local people.
So we've talked a little bit about the local people. Tell us, who are they? You said that they're Solomon Islanders.
Yeah, it's quite a unique situation. So over 100 years ago, the ancestors of these people came to Fiji from the Solomon Islands, and they were blackbirded, which means that they were essentially taken as slaves from the Solomon Islands to work on plantations in Fiji. And so their ancestors have been living for over 100 years on this patch of land. And because they're Solomon Islanders, they don't have any of the rights of indigenous Fijians. So indigenous Fijians have a lot of rights to land, to fisheries, to other things like that. They're quite limited in terms of their rights. If you were to speak to them, they're very much have become Fijian. They only speak Fijian. Their culture seems very Fijian, but due to a master of their ancestry, they are restricted in what they can do. So there are about 500 villagers living in this village, Naviavia, which is right in the center of the plot of land.
But they don't own the land at all, or they didn't. It was always church land, is that right?
So the church has historically owned the Natuavatu estate. That was gifted to the church by the original owners, and there is now a question of why this land was gifted to the church. So the church argue it was meant to provide funding for the bishop's expenses and for general expenses of the diocese. The villagers argue that the land was gifted to them, for them to live on, and for the future for the village to stay on, and so the Solomon Islanders would now have somewhere to live in Fiji. It seems that the church has now taken its own opinion and sold that land and invested that money to buy an apartment block in Suva instead, which it said will be more beneficial financially for the diocese. Mm. However, the villagers have been left with a small plot of land. So the land surrounding the village has been sold to Kiribati, but the land where the actual houses are has been retained by the church. And the problem with that is that the land around the village has always been farmed by the villagers, and they're continuing to do so in the absence of any presence from Kiribati, but they're very concerned for their future, that in the next, you know, next week, next year, the government of Kiribati might turn up and say, you need to stop farming that land. So they are very much reliant on the agriculture around their village.
It does seem like a very precarious position for them. It, as you've said, it also seems uncertain exactly what and when Kiribati might start making use of this land. So you've suggested that this may purely have been a publicity exercise, is that right?
I think there is definitely that possibility that exists. There may have been some original intention to use this land for one of the reasons that are stated, but it never doesn't seem to me that there was ever any plan put in place. Now, to invest this amount of money, around 10 million New Zealand dollars it was, for this land, that's about 5% of Kiribati's annual GDP. So to make an investment of that scale and to seemingly not have any plan and not to use it and then to leave it vacant for almost 2 years is a very odd thing to do. However, this land has been talked about in Le Monde, in major British, major American newspapers worldwide, and it's something that the president of Kiribati often brings up and has actually been very beneficial for Kiribati in terms of attracting attention. So if it was an investment for a publicity stunt, you could argue that it was actually a good investment for Kiribati and has been beneficial. But in terms of using this land to rehouse migrants to grow food, as far as I can tell, there doesn't seem to be any actual plan in place for that.
Finally, James, it occurs to me that we're just seeing elections in Kiribati, and we don't yet know what the outcome of that will be. Do you think that this is something that's likely to stick? Do you think that Kiribati is going to retain this land, or might a new government sell it on to someone else?
That's a good question, and I'm looking forward to speaking to someone from the new government to see that. I know there was some criticism from the opposition when Tong was in power over the purchase, but it will really depend on which of there might be up to a dozen candidates standing for president, turns out to be elected, and their policies. But in terms of selling it, I think it will be quite challenging for Kiribati to make any profit in terms of selling it. They did pay a very high price for that area of land, and some locals that I spoke to said that they actually paid far over the odds, so it may end up being a loss if they were to instantly sell it.
Are our affairs current?
Richard, great question.
The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.